Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Ready, Set, Mindful podcast. I am so lucky to be joined here today by my guest, Dr. Ashley Hines. She is a doctor of acupuncture and acupuncturist here at Kodwari Studios here in Tampa. She is two-time Best of the Bay winner. So if you are lucky enough to live in the St. Pete, Clearwater, Tampa area, come and see Dr. Heinz. Welcome to the podcast, Ashley.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, I am so excited for our conversation today to get started. And I just want to know a little bit more about you. I'm always so fascinated to learn the journey of practitioners and like how you got to this space and what kind of led you here.
Oh, well, I'm so grateful for the opportunity to talk about myself.
I know. So much fun.
And what the journey that led me as here to an acupuncturist?
Yeah. What are your interests that kind of led you here?
I think it's actually when I was a kid, my mom, when I was like 11, started making me read Brian Weiss books, which is
Oh,
a
awesome.
hypnotherapist who like studies past life regression.
Cool.
And she was very open-minded. And so I think, and then I also, my dad was in the military, so I grew up all over the world. So I
Yeah,
kind of
okay.
had the foundation of being very open-minded, which led me to be interested in all things esoteric or alternative,
Yeah.
and maybe more easily accept those things.
Yeah.
Not that you need to be open-minded to accept acupuncture, but I think a lot of people see it as something that is like woo.
Yeah.
And so to be even interested in it, I think
Yeah.
I already was predisposed to believe in those type of things.
Yeah.
And then I In college, I was studying nonprofit management, and a cousin gave me a book, and I forget who it's by, and I forget the name of the book, but it was basically about how the pharmaceutical industry is hiding all of these cures for profit. And then there's and so I was reading about the cures, and I got really like indignant and emboldened, like this is not right. And
Yeah.
there, the Chinese medical school I went to was in Orlando, and I went to UCF,
Okay, cool.
and the school is there. So I went there. I had like an old shoulder injury from a volleyball from playing volleyball,
Yeah. Oh, me too.
and
In
go
common.
figure,
Yeah,
two Amazonians.
I love it.
And so I went there. It was like $30 to get treated. I got treated once, and I never had the pain again. And I was like, "What is this voodoo?" And like anything that seems like magic, I'm like, "Oh, I want it."
Yeah.
So when I graduated, I went and worked for a nonprofit acupuncture clinic at first, just kind of like working the front desk and just to be around it.
Yeah.
And those physicians could treat everything with one treatment. And so
Okay.
after seeing them, I was just like, I just wanted it.
Yeah.
But I didn't know. Like it's something I could have never planned that would be my job. And
Yeah.
then I feel like it chose me.
Yeah.
Like I feel like it, yeah, because it was just like a spark one day that I wanted it. And then so then I went back to school for 4 years for it and studied.
Oh, that's
Yes.
fantastic. Yeah, I think so much of it is that alignment piece when you're open and you're in the right places and you're around the right people. And it sounds like you put yourself there to be around acupuncture and be around these practitioners. And then that alignment piece kind of follows,
It
right?
does. And I just saw the school and I saw the students, and I couldn't even picture myself as an acupuncturist. I could picture myself as a student. And I was like, it would be so fun to study this every day.
Yeah.
And that's as far as I went. I couldn't have ever imagined having my own practice. I
That's so cool. Well, I have to go back to the volleyball thing. I played volleyball. Tell me about your journey as an athlete and like with your injury and what you've kind of dealt with
So
there.
I had the great fortune of being an athlete in South Korea as a I've been this tall since I was 12 years old. I'm 5'9". So I lived in South Korea where I was double the size of all the girls that play sports. So I
Yeah.
thought I was Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Like I played every
So did
sport.
they. They were like,
I did. I think on my basketball team, I scored 60% of our team's points, and I was just,
That's
girl, go up, and I would,
dunking on girl.
yeah, volleyball,
That's
softball.
amazing.
I was just like, every award, and I was just like, I'm an Olympian, and this is my path.
Right.
And
Oh
then,
my gosh.
when I moved back to America, I got humbled real quick.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh no, I'm just a jump. Like,
We got two small puppies.
yes.
So Ashley has two small dogs. They'll be joining us
All of
today.
my patients know these guys are trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. Hey. But so, and then when I came back to the States, a lot of coaches wanted me because of my height and I always say what I lack in skill, I make up for in enthusiasm. And so I just loved being on a team and I loved practice. I didn't love games that much.
Yeah, interesting. You
Yeah, I
love
didn't like the
practices though.
Yeah, love practice. Like love just working out with your girlfriends, and it's so
Yeah.
fun. And then the games were so stressful, but
Yeah. for sure.
But some, but I think like high school volleyball was like some of the best times of my life.
Oh, yeah. So much fun. And you had a shoulder injury that led you to go and seek out acupuncture too.
And that's kind of a serendipitous story too, because when I was a senior, I was the captain. All the seniors were captains and we got to pick the JV team. And I really fought for this girl that wasn't that good, but just like had a lot of heart.
Yeah.
And I was like, I wanted her on the team so bad. And I fought for her. And the first day of practice, she tripped me running laps and I broke my arm.
No.
And I wasn't even like in a game or doing anything cool. I'm just running laps and she broke my arm. Yeah. And I didn't get to play my senior year because I was in the cast. But then that's what inevitably led me here.
Oh, dang it. Yeah. All kind of for, the timing of that. I love that story. It's just such a fascinating combination of things that you were exposed to growing up that kind of led you here.
Thank you.
Yeah, yes, that's awesome.
It feels like it worked out perfectly.
Yeah, right? Just as it should. So let's get into the benefits of acupuncture. I know you were talking about that acupuncture has been viewed maybe in the past like as more of a woo-woo alternative treatment, right? I think a lot of people are very open-minded to acupuncture, but for those out there who aren't quite sure of like the science and how it works and what benefits you can receive from acupuncture, why don't you kind of tell people about that?
So luckily the results speak for themselves and it has been contemplated forever. Like, is it a placebo?
Yeah.
What's actually happening? And I always, so whenever a patient asks me like, what's happening, how does it work? I always say, do you want the Western explanation, which is like what biological changes can actually be measured?
Sure.
Or do you want the Eastern explanation, which is the creators of the medicine and what's actually happening,
which is
much more embodied and convoluted and poetic.
Yeah.
So they always say both.
Yeah.
So I'm always like, let me put my PowerPoint on. But,
I love it.
So in Western medicine, what can be measured is that every treatment, no matter what you're treating, systemically decreases inflammation, mm-hmm. which is why it's good for pain.
Yeah.
And then also every treatment, no matter what you're treating, causes your midbrain to dump endorphins into your bloodstream because it's reacting to the micro injuries in your body. Mm-hmm. And then that endorphin dump is why it treats insomnia, anxiety, digestive issues, and why I think it's so effective for fertility.
Yeah.
And then, but now there's hundreds of points and each point has like 10 different indications.
Yeah.
And so they are working on trying to prove like, or some people are working at trying to study like why each point affects the body the way it does.
Yeah.
There's an acupuncture point on your shin that is supposed to increase your immune system through your stomach. And they were actually able to find that when that point is stimulated, you do create more white blood cells. And so they're slowly looking to prove each point, but it seems like an impossibility.
Yeah.
But I will say, I'm going to grab my Barbie show you.
So let's get it out.
So this is the model that the Eastern, like Chinese model is based off of, and it looks like a highway.
Yeah.
And so it's like all of these meridians in the body attached to an organ.
Yeah.
And the relationship is like the organ is the mother and the meridian is like an umbilical cord.
Mm.
And then your whole body is like the baby.
Yeah.
So you're receiving things from these organs that are trying to take care of you.
Yeah.
So where that umbilical cord or pathway runs, if there's any injury or pathology along that, it's because there's a block. And then the totality of your health is based off of the balance of these meridians working properly.
Right. Okay.
And so one of the reasons acupuncture was considered a placebo is because they couldn't find these meridians for the longest time.
Okay.
But like 20 years ago, physicians in China were studying connective tissue, the fascia, which if you don't know what fascia is, it's like if you took off your skin, you would still have your shape because fascia is like a net that holds your body together.
Yeah.
And it's made of collagen. So they found in the meridians, they found all the meridians in the connective tissue with the same pathways connecting to the corresponding organ from the Chinese model.
Wow.
And within the meridian, it's like microscopic, they found there's water. And when water is surrounded by collagen, it becomes piezoelectric. So it's almost like another nervous system.
Wow.
And what we say in these meridians, what we're manipulating, we say the word qi, which I don't know if you've heard like qigong.
Yeah.
Or like feel my qi. And that's another reason why a lot of people didn't take it seriously because like, what is qi? That's like nothing.
Yeah, sure.
But the Chinese symbol for qi is actually just the steam that's above cooking rice. It's water vapor.
Okay.
So it's a mixture of water and oxygen.
Okay.
And so I think that what they're like theorizing is that qi is just you being able to supply oxygen.
Right.
Different parts of your body that are blocked from injury,
yeah,
from trauma or from being malnourished,
yeah.
And even that, like since COVID, they've been studying health so much differently, and they found that the only way, so telomeres are part of your DNA that predict how long you will live,
yep.
And the only way to increase the length of your telomeres is to go in a hyperbaric chamber, which is to increase your oxygen intake,
right?
So it seems like what we're doing is moving oxygen and blood and water around your body where it needs it, and then like releasing dams, so to speak, that are blocking.
For sure.
For moving.
For sure. And cold training and sauna are really good for telomere lengthening as well, right?
Right. Yes, I am so excited by all the science that's coming out, because there's
super cool.
So much urge to want to like justify the practice,
yeah,
and be like, see, it's real, there's science. But
yeah.
Then the acupuncture comes from the Tao Te Ching, which is where Taoism comes from. And the first line of the Tao Te Ching is, the more you explain something, the less that it exists. So they were intentionally
so
vague.
I'm so glad that you said that. Yeah.
They were intentionally vague. So to preserve the magic of it.
Yeah.
And so then I realized, like, I've given lectures on the mechanisms of how it works, and I've explained it so many times, but truly, I have no idea. I have, like, I'm guessing, and everyone's guessing.
Yeah.
And I feel like explaining it that way really robs it of what it is. Because even though we can explain it and we can see all of those things, there's so much that's unexplainable that happens in here. Like the experiences people have. And I think it's something much more like rooted in like our ancestors or in a spiritual realm that we are not supposed to understand.
Yeah.
And I think I made the decision that I'm going to experiment for a while when patients ask me to explain what's happening.
Yeah.
I'm going to be like, can you just receive? Like, can you not try to comprehend what's happening and just like
that.
Receive the healing? And I'm going to play with that and see.
Yeah. Well said. I think there's this urge, this need to understand, especially for our anxious brain and our rational brain, to be able to wrap our head around something so that it quote unquote makes sense, right? But I totally agree. We do lose some of the magic that comes with acupuncture, meditation, mindfulness, plant medicine, like any of these things, that you're losing the cool, intangible magic when you are trying to go in depth to explain the benefits. And your justification for doing that treatment, are you going to be as open to receiving it? Are you going to receive it fully if you're anxious brain won't turn off, your rational brain won't turn off? Are you going to be able to put your nervous system really at rest?
Right. I have seen, because there was the belief for a while that you had to believe in it for it to work, the argument to that was, well, it works on animals, so how do you explain that? And I have had, it's on my, for my ego, it's my favorite patient, like a dude that comes in and they're like, I don't believe in this. My wife is making me do that. And then, and then afterwards they're like, my pain's gone. Like, what is this voodoo? That's like the best, when they don't believe and then it works.
A resistant patient.
So I don't think that you have to believe, but I think the experience will be much more full and healing if you let go.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just that openness. Yeah.
And maybe prevent more illness and injury in the long run once you start to understand. There's acupuncture. Truly, it's a reverence for your body, which I feel like maybe in the Western culture we don't have. Like, oh, my stupid shoulder, like, oh, my stomach, I hate, like,
we're so mean.
A lot of people hate, they have a lot of contempt for their physical form.
Sure.
And Chinese medicine has so much reverence and respect for this, like, divine specimen that knows how to heal you if you let it.
Yeah.
And the practitioner, too, like, I have to respect that I'm penetrating someone over and over again, like, they're trusting me.
Yeah.
And I think just giving the reverence to the human form kind of gives it space to heal itself as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the body's like, oh, you see me. Okay. And I'll give you a gift in return. Yeah.
I love that. When we're shutting that messaging down, and we're pissed at our injuries, we're pissed that we're not forced into rest and recovery, and we're not able to do what we want to do. There is so much frustration. There's resentment there. But yeah, I think it's so powerful to be able to say thank you to our bodies for what they're able to do for us every day. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
We don't do that enough. I know, we can definitely take a few lessons there, especially all the athletes that I work with. It's just, no one likes to be slowed down, right? It's not fun. But whenever that happens, it is a reminder to kind of like, okay, how can I do this better next time?
Yeah. Like if your body was your pet that you were taking care of, you would never be like, keep pushing.
Right.
You know, your baby. I don't have kids.
Yeah, me neither. It was to my two dogs. Would I talk to them that way? No. So what do clients typically come to you for? I know you mentioned fertility, pain, inflammation. Is it kind of just across the board, or do you have a percentage that
half pain? Okay. Maybe we'll say 45% pain, knee pain, elbow pain, wrist pain, headaches, and then 45% fertility. That's a huge chunk of my practice.
Yeah.
And then in the middle is like digestive orders, anxiety, depression,
sure,
things like that. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Why don't, we talk a little bit about how you would differently, like if someone walked in through your door, how you kind of would, you know, ask those questions to get them to, we were just talking about this before we started the podcast too, about the importance of people being transparent with you so that you best know how to help them.
Yes.
Right? If they're not honest, they can't really, you can't do your work.
And the body never lies. So we're trained. So that's why we look at your tongue. We check your pulse. I'm looking at your ears.
Honest, people, it's going to show up on your tongue.
And I say you can't start to needle someone unless that person feels a little bit seen and heard, which is part of the healing in itself, because you have to dig. And I was going to do a video recently about, I'm sure if you're any type of business where you work with other people and somebody sits down and they're just like word vomit, like somebody comes in and I'm saying, hey, what brings you in today? And they're like, oh, well, I was at my sister's baby shower last week and I had to pick up the chicken wings. And then I was going to CrossFit and they're all over the place.
Yeah.
And so for a lot of people, that's just like an annoying situation. But then for like an acupuncturist, they're looking at like their eyes, their tongue. Is this a deficiency of like a certain nutrient? Is this coming from like a trauma? Is this? And then, so everything the person does is giving you information about how to treat.
Yeah.
And so it always starts with like just the patient telling me what they want, what's wrong.
Yeah.
And then as I do my own, when I get them on the table and I check their pulses and I look at their ears and I check their tongue, then I start asking questions. And the more trained you are, which I have seen some masters, the more you can kind of pull from your patients. Like I can look at someone's tongue and be like, you do Adderall, you do cocaine, you do, I see amphetamines on your tongue. I can look at someone's tongue and like, are you, like there's so much you can see. And then you ask and then they give.
Yeah.
And then, out of respect, the Chinese, whoever created this medicine was able to tell like, oh, this line on their ear, it means that their father spanked them when they were a kid, or this mark here means their mother never hugged them. And like, so you can really dive into somebody's whole being, just to treat, you know, like carpal tunnel.
Yeah. Oh, that's wild.
And I don't do that with every patient because sometimes you have to read what the patient's ready for.
Yeah.
And if a guy comes in like a suit, I'm not going to jump right in and be like, you know, like, what did your dad do to you? You have to kind of like
build that rapport, that trust.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. No, that makes sense. I think that's such a good point too. I see that with clients a lot who will come to me for one thing. Like a lot of athletes come to me for performance anxiety or just anxiety, stress, that kind of stuff. And then really it's underlying trauma that doesn't, they want to think that it's something more surface, but really when we kind of start building that trust and rapport, it boils down to like, okay, now that we're here, we've built a little bit, can we really dig into what's happening?
And I am like the longer I'm in this practice and the longer I study healing or myself, it is so true. Like the book, The Body Keeps the Score, which is really popular.
Love it.
And of course I believe that it makes sense, but then like really experiencing it with patients and yourself, you're like, holy shit. Like it really is like so much like it's real, like how much your childhood affects your health and your physical body and your life. And
It's fascinating. I think acupuncture is, it's so cool. Acupuncture, yoga, meditation, all these things that are so special in releasing these blockages and allowing you to build this awareness in your body for things that have happened, which I think can be kind of intimidating to people who come to me for therapy or you come into your acupuncturist and it's like, you have to let go. You have to surrender. You have to trust and open that door. It can be kind of scary.
Definitely. You don't want to be vulnerable with a stranger or like, it's like letting someone see you naked. Our breathwork coach, I did a session with him.
Yeah.
And halfway through, I wanted to cry. And I was like, I'm not fucking crying in front of my coworker. Like I was fighting so hard and I couldn't control it. And then, when these things happen, like, even though I believe in it, I'm always like, holy shit, it's real. Like, it's really real. I hope that everybody gets to experience something like that for themselves. Cause that's when you really know. You know?
Yeah. Doing those practices where it's just you and this awareness and reflection. I'm always trying to encourage clients to kind of slow down, right? That's what like so many people are so intimidated by or resistant to, is just because we're consumed with our phones and sensory overload and things are so fast in nature that we forget to kind of build in that like self-care time throughout our day where we can just sit with ourselves. Cause I think a lot of people can be really afraid of what like was going to come up when they're truly alone and naked and afraid. Right.
Yes. I have definitely been really afraid. Like you have a knowing that this is actually something else, but you don't want to face it. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. I always think about like Plato's allegory of the cave, and how it relates to medicine and like the shadows could be your perceived healing. Even it doesn't have to just be like what you think reality is. Your healing could actually be those shadows, and what's actually causing the healing is something so completely different.
I'll link a couple of videos and different things that we talked about, by the way, in the show notes. Bessel van der Kolk, shout out, love him. Hopefully he'll be on the podcast someday, but Body Keeps the Score. Yeah. And then the allegory, if people don't know what we're talking about. So I know we talked a little bit about stress, nervous system, inflammation, and calming your nervous system is such a cool benefit of acupuncture.
Yes.
And all about the nervous system. What are some of your favorite ways that you calm your nervous system?
I mean, the breath is probably the most useful and available tool and the most powerful.
Yeah.
My whole fitness regimen is a spiritual practice. Like, I don't work out for like my physical health. I work out, and it's the practice here, Booty Yoga. Now there's a couple places, but it's like tribal dance yoga where you scream and hit the floor and twerk, but I'm addicted to it. It's like, it feels like church or medicine every time you do it. And if you think it's ridiculous because they're like rap music playing and you're like twerking, but people are crying and screaming. And I'm like, addicted to it. So that's my favorite way. If you haven't tried that class, there's a bunch now in Tampa. It's like starting to pop up more.
So wild. What do you think it is that gets you? So Booty Yoga, B-U-T-I.
Yes. Thank you for the clarification.
What is it really about fundamentally, not to get back to like not the science of it, but what do you think that it is that keeps drawing you back in?
I think it's somatic healing. So like we said, your body is like a computer of your whole life storing all these like traumas and your childhood and your past. And so you're stirring up the energy and moving it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's play. And I wanted to name my practice Wan Chi, which in Chinese is like play energy. Cause I feel like my job is like, I get to come play every day cause I'm playing with this medicine.
Yeah.
But then Booty Yoga too, it's for adults, you know, like, especially if you like miss clubbing or dancing and stuff, it's like an hour to play and go like,
when do we get that opportunity really?
Like open the fence and let the dogs run. Like you just get to be crazy and like I said, scream and hit the floor and move. And that is so rewarding. And it feels once you've done it, it's like, how could I never have not let myself be this uninhibited?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so interesting. I haven't done it. I need to do it. Yeah. That's so cool. I think we lose that element of allowing ourselves to be free and to play and to explore once we kind of hit a certain threshold or age, or I don't know, we do things that tie us down and we don't really take an opportunity to reconnect with our inner child and what makes us feel good.
And it's such a safe container because I think a lot of people feel embarrassed to move that way. But if you're in a room where like 50 people are acting nuts, it's like, you know, it really emboldens you to let go. And it's like a gift. It's a gift we give each other. Like the more crazy you act, the more crazy your neighbor can act. And then we can just keep feeding off of that and go nuts.
and then
go back to our normal lives. Like we didn't just, you know, act feral and crazy for an hour.
That's amazing. Yeah. So that's a good way to regulate your nervous system and breath work. And then what else? Walk me through like your routine, like how you nourish your body from the inside out that fills you up.
So I've been a vegan for 7 or 8 years now. I'm always like nervous to talk about it because I want to make sure I'm not inflicting shame on anyone else about their diets because it's for me. But I do feel like the earth birthed me, like it's my mother. I believe that. And so I love animals and I don't think that I can. I don't think that I'm so worried about making somebody feel bad, but I can't justify inflicting so much suffering on another creature so I can have a couple of nutrients. And so that's why I started with vegetarianism and I went to veganism. Yeah. And then when I was in school, and animal products was a huge part of Chinese medicine. So I was like, you should eat them to be healthy. But you know, this is 3,000 years ago and it was nothing like what our, but you know,
industrial,
the way we get food now. But also, there's a couple of clinics all over the world where they're curing incurable diseases. You know, there's the Garrison Clinic, there was Dr. CB Clinic. All they were doing was putting people on plant-based diets. So I'm like, if that's the cure for all these diseases, then it's also probably like just the easiest way to prevent illness. And I mean, I haven't been sick ever, like since I've been a vegan.
It obviously makes you feel from a belief system, values, alignment, space, you feel really good. And then also, I mean, physically you feel.
Yeah. It's a spiritual practice and it's a health practice to honor the planet that way.
I love it.
But if you don't do that, you're still like,
you're still a good human.
Yeah. You're still worthy of all the things and love. And it doesn't mean anything. Like it just, I would like everyone to consider, because I do think a lot of people are like, well, we need B12 and we need this protein. And with that justification, it's the same is saying, well, like, my neighbor has more money than me and I could use that money, so I can just go take it. To me, it's the same logic that you can take from someone else because you could benefit from it. You benefit from taking things from others.
But it's your own journey and everyone has their own journey. I think just something that a common thread that everyone can take is just to question the things that are working for you from like a spiritual, mental, emotional, physical practice point of view, especially like when it comes to food. I think we've kind of gotten away from asking ourselves these questions, like, does this make my body feel good? Am I eating this because I'm on autopilot and I haven't taken the time to intentionally question it or get curious about it? Does this still make sense for me?
Yes.
Does it make me feel good?
And take, yeah, exactly. And also we're inundated with information. Like we're spoiled for choice and of information. So, and then I think people get so stressed out, like, what is the right way to eat? Like there's so many. So I always tell people, like you have to learn yourself. What do you want? What is your goal? Is it to live as long as you can? Is it to be as sexy as you can? Is it to be as strong as you can? Because those all necessitate different diets. And I think a lot of people don't even know that question.
Sure.
Like, so once you figure that out, it kind of helps you down a path.
Right.
Because it, like, also there's nothing wrong with, while I'm here, I want to experience the most sensations I can, which means Cheetos and candy and like junk food, because that's a high, you every right to have that experience if you want it. There's no wrong.
But I think the food and mental health connection, it's so important. And I think when you're not feeling good from an emotional and mental and physical standpoint, we have to question our food choices. We acknowledge that that plays a part in our depression, our anxiety, right?
Like there's a study done. They took, I think, 30 people with depression, and all they incorporated was an enormous bowl of orange and yellow fruits, like pineapples and mangoes and oranges. And that's it. Just eat this bowl of fruit a day. You don't have to take anything out of your diet. Just eat this enormous bowl of fruit a day. All of them got better. All of them. That's so crazy. And you can look at this Chinese medicines, like the plants that grow in the sun and grow higher have yang energy, which is like uplifting energy. So if you're eating foods that have that energy, you then get it in your body.
It's interesting.
And then I'm sure Western medicine would talk about like the vitamin C. Like, I'm sure they could dissect it to see why it works.
Right.
But yeah.
Well, from just a color standpoint, I know that, I
orange
mean, from,
and yellows,
yeah, right.
Yeah,
the orange and yellows.
Plexus and the sacral chakra.
Yeah. It's interesting. Food and mental health. It's a really big connection. Is that something that you kind of mindfully talk to your clients about too?
No food at all.
Okay.
I mean, like, so I have gotten in early on in my practice, I have gotten some patients to go vegan, and I got people to reverse their diabetes. Ex-football players who had pain for 20 years gone in a week of eating vegan. So, but again, I want this to feel like a safe place. And the last thing I want is my patient to feel judged. Yeah. I'm trying really hard to just nurture them.
Sure.
So and maybe as I grow, I'll find more ways to integrate talking about their life choices. But right now, like I'm just like hinted, like, well, you could check this out if you wanted.
And that's fair. I think we have to be really mindful about the way that we all have really complex relationships to food, especially as females, right? And female athletes and like in this world. And so have to be super mindful about that. But from like a mental health perspective, I'm always asking those questions for my clients with anxiety, like, hey, what's your caffeine consumption look like? Let's look at that. Let's look at the levels of anxiety when there's an excess of sugar or caffeine in the diet, right?
Yes. Like, let me backtrack. I do, if somebody has like an idiopathic ailment, like I've been to so many doctors and nobody knows what it is, then I will say, tell me everything you eat each day. And what are your staples? Like, what do you eat every day? And usually you can always find, like, I'll find like a, I had a woman who was a triathlete come in. She was super healthy, and she'd recently given a lupus diagnosis. She felt like her health declined overnight, but the doctors couldn't really figure out what was going on. So I tell me everything. And she was like, I'm addicted to salmon from Sam's Club. Like, I eat it every day. It's delicious. So I was, while she had needles in, I pulled it up. I found like four different studies linking Sam's Club salmon to lupus diagnosis. And there was some like metal toxicity in that fish that was causing all the symptoms of lupus. So it is really important to look at your food for that reason, just because, especially in this country, because our food isn't really food anymore. So
absolutely.
I think the realization I'm coming to is like, to, if your goal is longevity and avoiding disease, we just all have to eat way less.
Our portion sizes. I was talking about that with my husband the other day, just like the portion sizes that I ate growing up and how just unhealthy those things were. And my husband's first initial response was to protect me, of course, and to justify. He's just like, oh, but you're young. You can have cereal out of a mixing bowl. Who cares? And I'm like, no, that's not great. Because guess what? That stuck with me. And as a 20-year-old athlete who's off at college, I was also eating a cereal bowl full of in a mixing bowl. I'm like, that was not great. So I think the food choices, the portion sizes that we have are just anything when we're on autopilot gets normalized, right? Yes. And so it's just the conditioning that we're constantly like exposed to of these massive sizes that are everywhere you turn. And if you really are closing your eyes when you eat and you're asking yourself this question of like, am I full? How does this feel for me? If we take a minute to slow down, those portion sizes are
aren't great. What was totally unfair for, because our generation is what got it first, is that's by design. Like the food is designed to make you addicted to it and not to satiate you. So you want it. So it's cereal. Like same thing. Like
right.
when you're an athlete and you're working out all the time, yeah. You can't get enough cereal.
It was amazing how many bowls you would eat and still be hungry.
Because there's zero nutrients.
Right.
And so your body's still starving, yeah. but the insulin spike that you get from the cereal is the drug. So now you're getting like more, but no nutrients. So I need more and you never get satiated. And it's the perfect business model. To
absolutely.
Have people eating a box of cereal a day to keep buying General Mills. And it's so sad and so hard because kids, if they're not educated or all the food that they like or all the food their friends eating is poison that is designed to get them in, like addicted. And then they have to not only battle with the reasons they're overeating emotionally, but also battle against like chemicals cravings. That are designed to get them on the hook.
Oh man, it's fascinating. I could definitely rabbit hole on that. But yeah, there's so much marketing that and conditioning that is at play in our society that's unfortunately not to keep us the most healthy. That's not going to make money. So it's the acupuncture, breath work, yoga, things we can do for free to keep ourselves healthy and safe and feeling good. And that stuff isn't
a big something I'm passionate about, and I should take the same approach towards food, I'm realizing now, but I feel very passionate about pharmaceutical drugs. Mm-hmm. And so something I really like to do is get patients off because there's so many that are unnecessary and that people are on their entire lives because the doctor told them and they don't need it at all. Like they don't even have the disease that they're taking the medicine for. So again, it's a business and they trust their doctors, but I'm realizing that it's the same with food. So I probably could benefit a lot of people if I was willing to talk about that more.
I understand your perspective for sure. And that the pharmaceutical, go over that with clients too. And that's a tricky one to navigate as well, because people trust their providers and it's always their choice. And sometimes people come to me, I have to remind them of that and empower them to understand that, hey, this is your choice. Your doctor should not ever tell you what to do. It's your choice. And is this working for you? And how is it working out? And what are some things you can point to figure out if it's working, you know, getting them to question that a little bit.
There it is. Whoever made the powers that be have done such a great job is taking away people's ability to feel sovereign. And they're looking at us. Help me. Tell me. I'll do anything. I'll eat anything. I'll put anything in my body. I'll do anything you say. Just help me. So on my Instagram page,
you have all your own answers, though.
Yes, exactly. I'm trying. I always word it. I always say play with yourself because I think that's hilarious.
I love it.
But I'm like, play with yourself, but do experiments on yourself because only you are really going to know what works best for you. So like,
for sure.
If you're like, what probiotic do you recommend? And I was like, I recommend trying a different probiotic every single month and seeing how you react to it, because the probiotic I like is not going to react the same to you.
Yeah.
And that one's also the more like diverse your microbiome is, the better off you are. So it serves you to take a bunch of different probiotics anyways, but with anything, with any diet, with any drug, with any practice, instead of looking for somebody to tell you what to do, why wouldn't you just experiment with yourself?
It's so interesting you brought that up though too. And I think where my mind was going is just that need to want to connect or to feel that, that community, that closeness, and that you're doing the right thing. You're pointed in the right direction. If Dr. Hines, if Ashley tells me that I'm doing this, I know I'm in a good spot. And there's this kind of resistance to trust your own internal navigation.
Yeah.
And
they want to be a good girl.
We just,
or a good boy. Yeah.
And that's a tough one. People don't like that answer though, because it's, I think sometimes we're looking for something that's quick and easy or the best practice, but it's so individual.
And don't want to waste time on failing. Like,
exactly.
That's so much trust in the practitioner to be like, tell me what to do so I don't have to suffer anymore.
It's true. I was in a Facebook group too. I haven't really talked about this so much on the podcast, but I feel like it's important because I'm in this Facebook group for women who are struggling with fertility and working through all of this and has their own story and their own trajectory that they're on, but everyone's looking for, wait, which doctor did you use? And how many times did you use this to get pregnant? Or how many times did you use this for it to work? And there's this like desperation, this craving, this yearning to try the one thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's so individualized, right?
Yes.
And it's hard for people to accept and swallow sometimes.
And that desperate energy to get it right.
Yeah.
Also is like the opposite environment that you would need to conceive. You know,
right.
So that's something I talk about all the time. I have tons of Instagram videos on it. I don't know if you saw my most recent one about the girls doing shrooms and ecstasy
to
get pregnant.
No, oh my goodness.
I've said the spiel 1,000 times, but all my fertility patients are the same archetype of a woman, taskmaster, perfectionist. So I give the spiel to every single patient. And then I also always say I've never had a stoner chick or like a hippie chick with issues. It's or like they're the opposite. Like party girls are like, shh, it's like an accident. So I share that. And so recently, because I share that antidote, the woman was about to start IVF and instead she went and did shrooms with her husband and got pregnant. And then I took that antidote and I shared that. And that patient, another patient went and did ecstasy with her husband and got pregnant. And I'm like, oh no, like what have I done? Like, I don't want to be the doctor that's like telling people to go, but I just think it's really interesting that it's like,
what do they all have in common though? I mean, if you can talk about that common thread of letting go, right?
I think the desire to be good and to be perfect is so strong, but that the desire to be good creates the hormonal storm in your body of cortisol and adrenaline and things that aren't conducive to creating life. And so then I tell these women, you got to relax and be happy. And they're like, yeah, thanks. Like that sounds great. But then acupuncture, like I said, it causes the endorphin dump in your blood. So those endorphins can override the stress hormones. But I think the shrooms or the drugs or whatever, if somebody really can't let go and get out of their own way of wanting to be perfect, it kind of forces them for a couple hours to be in another space where they're like, everything is great and wonderful. And that seems that energy or that hormonal environment.
Yeah.
Seems to be a better place for conception than to be like, is this perfect? Am I doing it right? Because even perfectionists, when they're practicing relaxation, they're like, am I breathing right? Am I relaxing perfectly? And then they can't get off the wheel. Sometimes plant medicine is a way to like kind of kick you off the wheel temporarily.
Yeah. It's so interesting that you said that. I think there's resistance to letting go sometimes. And I'm not excluded to that, like letting go. And I'm really protective over my rituals and things that I feel like I should practice what I preach, but that gets sometimes to the extent of like, you know, it's not working how it should if you're timing out your meditation and your breath work and you're
rigid in your flexibility.
Yeah, exactly right. So it's like, what am I doing? Oh my goodness. Oh. So I mean, it's a good reminder for those of us who have a hard time letting go.
And how do you talk to women? And I'm asking your advice now. How do you talk to women like that without ever making them feel like they're bad or they're wrong? Like, I don't want to inflict shame. Like you're too much of a perfectionist or you're too rigid, you know, cause we thank God for people like you. We need you. I need people like you, you know, like, it's a delicate to make people feel held and loved as being who they really are, but then also trying to get them to get out of their own way.
For sure.
Sometimes.
Yeah. I think it's all in the degree and the tone and like the empathy and the curiosity. I think that's where everything is. And just with anybody who's been around Ashley, you're like, oh my gosh, you can absolutely never make somebody feel uncomfortable because your energy is so warm and so nurturing. And that's honestly like the biggest piece of the puzzle, right? If you're sitting across from somebody and you feel like they have a genuine understanding and empathy and curiosity about you, you're going to be more likely to open up and to receive what they're saying. And then if I'm just really mindful of like my delivery and my tone, and I'm like really asking them a lot of questions and I'm actively like listening to them, then it's not going to come across as me being judgmental or biased or inflicting shame on them at all. Right. I mean, I've never had that feedback from clients. And I think people are just more receptive if you're just your delivery is everything.
Delivery is everything. If anyone
Absolutely.
Has ever felt judged by either of us, please let me know.
I think for any practitioner, whether you're acupuncturist or physical therapist or psychotherapist, the goal always should be, right, to build that trust and that empathy and that kindness with your client so that the more you do that, the more they can be transparent and the more you can actually help them. So people feel that and they're vibing you out and like, oh, Ashley feels like such a good fit for me. I feel like I can be myself and be honest. Man, like your healing is going to be great.
Yeah.
You're streamlining that because you're opening that space, you know?
Yeah.
which is special. So that's good. Yeah, of course. So we talked a little bit about booty yoga. What else is a part of your routine that you feel like contributes to you feeling like your best self? What else fills you up?
I don't know if it's a gratitude practice, but my job in itself is like a practice in gratitude and spirituality, because it just necessitates it. And so I feel like it's such a privilege to have this job and to work with people.
Yeah.
And I always feel like I'm not worthy and I'm so grateful. And then that, because my job is so easy and so fun and everybody is so grateful. And then that I'm like, holy shit, this is my life. I feel like just having that every day keeps me grounded, because I'm humbled all the time. And so that's the practice. And I get to be humbled and love my job. And so many people don't get that. Yeah. Having that kind of awareness that like, holy shit, I'm so lucky is a way to keep me. And I don't have a husband or any kids. And so I have very little responsibilities.
That helps.
That's not really fair for me to say that, like, these are my practices with my very little amount of responsibilities I've incorporated into my life.
I always try to like remind clients, like, okay, we got to have some non-negotiables here. Like, what are your non-negotiables?
Yeah,
you know, I need a little bit of breath work, or I need a little bit of this or that. Like,
yeah, that's I feel like I don't have space to give it, because I'm totally free, and I've intentionally created my life that way. But the majority of people did not. So,
right, what a blessing.
I'm like, I mean, get 10 hours of sleep, you know, and like, you do whatever you want, and you know, go to ecstatic raves every weekend. And I was like, yeah, bitch, thanks for that. So
I'm married, I have a toddler.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I love that. I could talk to you all day, but I know we got to wrap up. But this was one of my questions too. This is one actually my husband thought about. Not that he doesn't have good ideas, I should say actually, but I always read him my podcast questions and I'm like, hey, is there anything that you'd be curious about asking? And he asked this question. So this is from Austin to Ashley. He said, hey, what red flags, if I'm looking for an acupuncturist, what are some maybe red flags to look for? Or what are some things that you should look for in an acupuncturist to figure out like if they're the right fit for you?
Okay.
Yeah, bring it.
Drama.
Let's
I would say, I don't know many of my fellow acupuncturists, but I would say that to know if I always tell my patients to know if this is the right treatment for you, or if I'm the right physician for you, you have to notice something after one. And so when an acupuncturist is like, okay, I need to see you twice a week for 10 weeks for you to start. And that's how most operate. And some of the people that trained me operated that way, but I also had the fortune of working with people that one treatment, and that, you know, 1 to 4 treatments, and they were better. So I tell people, and even if after one treatment, you're not better, even if you're worse, at least you know something happened. But so, cause sometimes like for some reason with knees, my patients after the treatment, the next day, their knees are way worse. And then like on the third day, the pain's gone.
Interesting.
But there has to be noticeable, palpable change after one session.
Yeah.
And even if it's only, okay, I feel 40% better, but there has to be something measurable. Know that that's the right. And so in my own practice too, I'm like, I tell them to text me, because I need to know because if there's no change, then I didn't choose the right protocol. There always is.
So how are you?
Yeah. Just so good.
I love it. But yeah, everybody.
And you know, there's acupuncturists in Tampa and St. Pete that are practicing without degrees, but they're practicing from a lineage of family that trained them for hundreds of years.
Sure.
So because I would say, oh, make sure they have I've seen people recommend, make sure they have these credentials and make sure they've taken these boards. But I mean, I don't think to be an effective healer that you necessarily have to have all that paperwork. Come referred. Like, ideally you know people that have been healed by them.
Yeah.
And then I recommend play with it, experiment on yourself, try it.
Yeah.
But I would say after one treatment, there needs to be something noticeable that changed.
Yeah, that's great. And again, like we talked about earlier, everyone has, I know people maybe don't like to hear this or are resistant to hearing this, like you have all of your own answers too. And you're way more intuitive than you think you are. So trust that vibe is right.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm really transparent with clients. Like if there's somebody that I feel like just isn't the best fit. We were talking about this earlier before the podcast though. And I was telling Ashley, I kind of wean out in my 15-minute free consult calls with clients. I'll drop an F-bomb, or I'll swear a little bit, or I'll say something to kind of dip my toes and see if we're the right fit. Because if that person is really offended by my, you know, lack of professionalism or the fact that I'm real and I'm raw and I'm going to be having that conversation and asking these questions in this way, are we the best fit for working together? Right. The vibe is very, very important.
Yeah. I love that. It's really hard to heal without authenticity. So if you're behaving and being buttoned up,
Yeah.
Like, it's just so much more to work through.
That's true. So I'm like, don't let my little ballerina bun fool you. I was like, I'll drop an F-bomb
and
I'll
ring girl.
I'll see if we're a good fit for working together. But I'm so glad that you said that. And I'm curious. So our last question, wrapping up, what advice you'd give to 20-year-old Ashley? What would you say to that girl?
Get a therapist. I know I started therapy 3 years ago.
Okay.
And I'm 37. And I feel like I could have given this advice to 20-year-old Ashley or 35-year-old Ashley because they were both totally in the dark.
Yeah.
And I feel like the amount of maturity I've had in the past 3 years, it literally feels like I was living in the dark and someone turned the light on. Shout out to my therapist, Heather. You saved my life. Anyways, she's just amazing. But
yeah.
She taught me so many things that I had no idea that should be common sense.
Yeah.
I felt like, how did I not know this? So if you are in your 20s, and I know it's like, but now there's so many tools. Like, they have different ways to get therapy. And
there's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of apps. I mean, yeah, make sure you're vetting people and you're vibing out the therapists and coaches.
To
and
learn
stuff.
Your where.
Yeah.
And then go in and like change it if you need. And it's just like, it sets you up to have such a better life.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is my.
Oh, yeah. Cool. I love it. And I'm a therapist who also is a therapist. And it's, yeah, I agree with Ashley. I think it's just, it's that next level awareness that you're in the dark sometimes and not having access to all the tools, even though I'm so immersed in my practice and everything that I'm learning, but I'm not able to work on myself.
Yeah, right? I've been like a spiritual hippie my whole life, but then I didn't yeah. know. You don't know what you don't know.
It's true.
And it's the best gift you can give yourself. So even like, if you're like, you know, you're paying out that couple $100 every month, just like you, it's the best gift you can give yourself, I think.
Right.
Yeah. Oh,
I love that. Well said, Ashley. Ashley, if people want to find you, where can they go?
I'm here at Kotawari in South Tampa. On my Instagram, on my Facebook, on all the times, there's links to just put yourself on my schedule.
Yeah.
I'm booked out now a couple weeks in advance, but I'll have another office in this building soon. So I'll be able to double the patients I see. So that's coming up soon.
Awesome. So you're at Dr. Heinz on Instagram, right?
I'll link. I don't think I have doctor in my website. I think it's just ashleyheinz.com. But if you go on the Kotawari website, there's links to book.
On your Instagram, it's dr.ashleyheinz.
Yes. Oh, yeah. You were giving my Instagram.
Yeah.
On my website.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, good.
Yes.
I'll link everything. Everyone.
Thank you. Yes. Everything is Dr. Ashley Heinz. Yes.
So, all right, everybody, hopefully you learned something and were enlightened in some way by this podcast and everything that Ashley had to share. It was such a fascinating conversation.
I feel like this went great.
I loved it. We'll just wait for the feedback. So we'll know soon. But yeah, hopefully you guys have a great rest of your week. And thank you so much for being
here.
It was amazing. We'll have to do a round two sometime.
Oh, yeah.
Great. Okay. All right. Bye, everybody. Make sure to leave us a review if you liked what you heard. We will catch you on the next episode.